this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello and welcome back to Sax and Jax. I'm Kamal. Ricky on the board. SP futures down 85. Ouch. NASDAQ futures down 405. This is after a huge day yesterday, and I think we were up last night when I looked during the football game. I don't know. We have Professor Carl. Is he there?
I am.
Sorry.
So what did you do? Would you put out a missive at like 11 o'clock last night to turn this market around or what?
Oh, no, if I'm reading my chart correctly, it was about 10 o'clock when, it kind of turned the other way, right? I mean,
yeah, I had it up earlier when I checked during the football game.
It was up a little, yeah. I was like, okay, you know, is this garbage going to keep going on? You know, I tell you, when so I want to go back to something we were talking about Friday because you challenged me on something that I was talking about, and I said, oh, no, you're wrong, and I'm going to give you the facts, but let's do this one first. you know, what's been driving this craziness is all of this BS that is very 1999-ish about circular financing games, which are all over the AI space. And that's been driving this rally, okay?
It's where the money's going, but the money's coming in, and it's driving the rally. Go ahead. I understand you know that. Go ahead.
Okay. The fact of the matter is that where it doesn't go is anywhere like that, nor do you get valuation numbers like this without there being some kind of a demonstrably false set of statements regarding the future that are very easily proved false if anybody pays attention. But of course, nobody does right up until it all blows up. And then people are like, oh, we never could have seen that coming. Okay. Just like happened in 2006, right?
Yep.
Never could have seen that coming. Okay. Except that one of the things I've been yelling about is the replacement cycle in all rapidly developing technologies, which, when it comes to anything having to do with the computer, I might know a little bit about, since it's essentially what I've done my entire professional life. And in fact, before I had one, all the way back to when I was like 13. All right. And that is this. The service life of equipment in these kinds of environments is literally a year or two before it is no longer economic for you to use it. That doesn't mean it doesn't work. Right, I mean, I've got computer equipment. Hell, the main board that's in a couple of my pinball machines is actually a PC-style board with a Media GX chip on it. By the way, that dates to like 2000. Right?
What are the ones in like the 70s? Were they just all wires?
It was electromagnetic, right?
Okay.
So I mean, it was relays and stepper motors, and actually the primary, there was a primary score motor that had a bunch of cams in it. They're pretty cool.
I used to see the guys come and repair them with just about a huge nest of wires.
Well, I know how to fix them, both the EMs and the electronic stuff. To basically fix them means figure out which contact isn't closing when it should be, and you know, repair that. But here's the thing about this. Last night, I actually saw somebody and I don't remember who it was, but it was one of the pundits in the space who comes out with this thing and says, "Well, you know, we have." I think it was related to Oracle and their and this thing that you know. Oh, of course, these guys can pay their hosting bill. Right,
yeah,
it's one of those deals, right? Of course they can pay. You know, OpenAI, look, I mean, you know, okay, it's only $20 billion. Blah, 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 blah. And somebody analyzed all this and said, oh, well, you know, this is not all that crazy. I mean, you know, here's a data center that's going up and it's got a 10-year amortization. And as soon as I heard 10-year, your air conditioner may have a 10-year usable service life in that building. Perhaps.
Well, the old ones used to do more, but the new ones maybe not.
Well, no. Yeah. I mean, that's not to say it won't work after 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it, you know. But at that point, it no longer is appropriate. It costs more to run, and it doesn't deliver enough cooling, and therefore you're going to tear it out because you need more capacity in the same space in order, because of the density and all that. So, you know, maybe your HVAC box, your chiller, has a 10-year service life. However, the network switches that connect all the stuff together have maybe a 3-year usable service life before they become obsolete. They're just not fast enough. And oh, by the way, the compute components in that building have a 1 or 2 year service life. Now, this is a fight that I had with taxing authorities because, of course, you know, you have depreciation schedules when you're as a corporation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
that you have to deal with. And oh, by the way, that has a lot to do with how, you know, the taxes that you pay. So actually matching that to the real service life of the equipment you have is kind of important, because otherwise you're paying taxes on a schedule out in the future on something that no longer has a serviceable purpose. I mean, it the distortion can literally sink you, okay, if you're not careful. So this is a fight you have to have if you're in that kind of a business. And as soon as I heard this, the flag goes up, because here is a guy, and he got called on it. And if you take this and you multiply that destruction rate, if you will, of this capital equipment by 5, and then try to tell me that they're going to be able to make the payments. No, they're not.
Are you telling me that people that watch TV or watch right-wing or left-wing shows are looking for information or affirmation?
Well, you know, it appears they're looking for something other than information.
Yes.
It could be that is the case.
I think that is the case.
Well, of course, and the same, by the way, the same thing with people who are now piling into gold and silver because, you know, silver broke $50 and gold, you know, gold's over 4K. And oh, by the way, gold is going to be money again and da-da-da, and I've heard this my entire adult life. Oh, by the way, if you're actually after an inflation hedge, gold has terrible correlation. Okay, I mean, the correlation is absolutely awful. Being off by a number of years does not help you one little itty-bitty bit. And if you really wanted that, where you ought to be is in something like the S&P 500. Because from the standpoint of actual performance, it's not even close. Okay?
Now, starting at what year?
Well, but you can cherry-pick in with metals. And, of course, what everyone does is ignore the fact that for 50 years, you literally couldn't trade this stuff. Because the government in the Depression turned around and said, oh, by the way, you can't legally own it or trade it.
I'm with you on all that, and because it's for some of my people, it's my biggest positions in some of this stuff. And that doesn't mean I'm disagreeing with you. There's many levels to this. First of all, if you use the market as an inflation hedge from 67 to 81, you were bleep out of luck.
Well, duh.
Yeah, so that market didn't go anywhere. Now, gold did, but I think it's all about, and I know you know this, but it's all about not teaching people, but somehow or another, the way we price stuff gives people very, very odd looks on the world. We say the price of Pepsi is up from $2 a bottle to $2.50. All right, whatever the hell it comes out to be. We never say the price of the dollar just went to from $4 per Pepsi or for whatever, $4 per Pepsi to $5. We never look at it the other way,
right?
Which we should. And when I look at the gold, I mean, for God's sake, I was wondering if I should be in GDX at 32. I'm still there. I'm 79. Every day I'm going, should I still be in here? But it looks to me like from Russell says he still keeps his eye on the China stuff. He's been over there for a million times.
Yeah.
Because they're pouring money into the system so damn fast, and we're doing the same thing here. It's not about me thinking gold is worth more. It's me thinking these people are making the stuff gold is valued in worth less.
Well, but the thing is that, you know, it's because you're a trader, right? And because I've done this and I do still do this, my thing is, like, you know, I wake up every morning and I say, do I still want to own this at this price, at today's price?
I do that like five times a day.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, whatever it was worth yesterday or whenever I bought it is irrelevant to the question.
Exactly right.
Okay. And
but I have a little trick where yesterday we nudged our puts up $4.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, you wake up in the morning and you look at your screen and you say, okay, will I buy this at today's price? Because that is what I do if I sit on my hands, if I own it today. I am actually deciding to purchase it today at that price because I can give it to somebody else at that number. Right.
The only person in the world that agrees with you on this is probably me. Everybody else is convinced where you bought it. You know, they're still up. If I buy something at 50, it goes to 100. Now it's 70. I'm still up, and I go, it sounds to me like you're down 30. But
Yep. But I mean, that's it, and that's the only mindset you can have where eventually you will not get ruined. Okay.
If I could not find some puts on this stuff, if puts did not exist, there's no way I'd be in this stuff at this price.
Oh well, yeah, duh. So anyway, I want to take the 5 minutes or 2 minutes and
okay. Did you notice before that the average you know what they're calling this now? Well, you know, I've been in economics a long time. We're in a K-shaped outlook. You ever heard that term?
Oh
before?
Yeah, I heard that one.
Well, the average price of a new car is now 50 G.
And oh, by the way. All those people who supposedly have all this money, that supposedly are, you know, really, really wealthy, okay? Number one, it's not cash. It's not, and by the way, none of them will convert it into cash, therefore it's not spendable.
No, right. It's in stocks or it's in houses.
Right, it's all impounded, okay, in some way. And by the way, if it's in real estate, that has a substantial time delay. And, you know, obviously, if you're in stocks, you could sell them all today, right? But if it's in something that is somewhat illiquid, oh boy, you can have all sorts of fun with that, especially if it's not one piece of whatever. But the other part of it is that a huge percentage of it, and I know you follow this because we've talked about this a bunch on the show, is levered in some way, a.k.a. the margin statistics, right?
They're going up like $50 billion a month. I've never seen that.
Oh, by the way, what's even worse...
By the way, did you get the last... I didn't look the last month, did you?
No.
I'll look.
But it's,
keep talking, but it's I'll look.
But it's continuing to go up.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, what's even worse than that is the number of people who are levered off the book of that, off that book, okay? In other words, they're not in that statistic, but they're geared in some other way. People like Elon...
Do you have any... I keep asking this because I know... I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you have any idea what the debt is? I've tried to find the debt on crypto, and the most I can get is like $50 billion. It's got to be more than that.
All right, yeah, I'm sure it is. But that, I mean, like I said, there's a whole bunch of this gearing that's not in that margin statistic.
Yeah, the only one you can actually look at is on the listed stocks.
Right, exactly. And yet, you know, I mean, we know, for example, that Elon has a crazy amount of his wealth that isn't actually his because it's pledged against something. Okay.
You're absolutely correct. April 2025.
Right.
This is the FINRA. This is just listed stocks. It's nothing Carl's talking about now. The stuff we don't know about. We don't know about Chinese property. We don't know about crypto. April was, for a while, actually, we were bumping along at kind of the same number, Carl. That's why I wasn't all that worried. We were right about $900 billion. Well, we went from 813 in September 24 to 890 in November. So that was a big jump. And we kind of hung around there to 850 this April. So actually, it didn't go up at all. And all of a sudden, 920, trillion 7, trillion 22, trillion 59. So it's on the huge march up again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So anyway, let me just take the 2 minutes, because I do not want to end up getting timed out on this one
right,
again today.
Fair enough. Go.
All right. So remember, we were talking about the fact that it's my assertion that 20% of the economy, most of it, other than things like car accidents, getting shot, you know, trauma, is essentially a multifaceted collective scam. It's racketeering. And what's even worse than that...
Well, what do you think it should be, 10?
Well, actually, yeah. No, I think it should be about 4, which okay. is what it was before all this craziness got going. Okay? Now, that's percentage of GDP. Obviously, GDP is bigger, so you know the number would be larger. But one of the drivers of this is all of these claims that all this... You know, we don't pay for results in the United States. We pay for procedures. Okay? So the more stuff that someone can do to you, the more money people make. Now, that is only supportable if the results of the procedures are improved outcomes. If they are, then you can defend this as a means of getting to a legitimate end that people will believe in. All right. I mean, I couldn't argue with that. You know, okay, we spend more money on detecting colorectal cancer. And mitigating it when we find it. Okay, if it kills you anyway, then all we did was steal your money. That's all that happened. If it doesn't kill you anyway, something else kills you, because eventually something kills everybody. If something else kills you, then we can legitimately say that this is, but okay, we spent the money, we prevented you from dying of that thing. And, you know, time goes on, and all right, fine, I'm good with this. As long as whatever it is that we did didn't cause the ultimate death anyway, okay, even though it was a different thing. All right? So, I mean, yo, we give you some treatment for something that was going to kill you, it destroys your kidneys, and you die of kidney failure. That goes in the bucket of a failure. That does not count as success, all right? But assuming that that sort of thing, and of course we had a lot of that happened during the crazy, right, is that we treated you for...
Well, we paid a bonus for COVID.
Well, we paid you a bonus to take a drug that we knew destroyed people's kidneys, and oh fancy that, 1 in 5 times it did, and it killed the guy, all right? That sort of not... And by the way, that's why paying for procedures is something we have got to stop, because without valid statistics, without people actually looking at the numbers, you're never going to stop it, because people will believe, because they're told by everybody, including by, incidentally, this current administration, even though RK claims to be very strongly against, absolutely in support of evidence.
He's
BS,
so full of crap. It's unbelievable.
Well, BS. All right. So in 2010, now remember what happened right around that time. Obamacare was passed. And one of the things that Obamacare did was mandate that all of these screenings be zero-cost things for the person who is having them done, all right, as part of your so-called health insurance. And the premise behind this was that detecting bad things much earlier would mean that we could treat them more successfully, and therefore you would not die of said thing.
Well, it would okay. actually would be a cost savings.
Well, in theory, okay, yeah. Assuming it actually does prevent you from dying of the thing, okay? Not only do you not die, which is good, but in addition to that, we don't spend all this money on
In layman's terms, if you give somebody a $50,000 shot of chemo and it cures them and the guy pays tax for another 25 years, it's a great deal. If it doesn't cure...
Yes, it's a win, okay? It not only is it a win monetarily, it's a win for the guy who doesn't croak.
Without a doubt.
Right? So, I mean, yeah, so it's a win. However, that's not what happened. And I'm going to take I'll take the 2023-2024 stuff out, because one of the things that you said, and you have some validity there, is that during the crazy, you couldn't get screened because all the doctor's offices were closed, right?
Yep.
All right, so Therefore,
well, some of the regular stuff that I think we know sort of helps, breast cancer screenings, those kinds of things. It all stopped.
This is why I want to bring this up. Okay, in 2010, 42,009. This is according to the CDC. And according to the NIH and ACS, along with the CDC, the number is 51,000 colorectal cancer deaths, okay? Total colorectal cancer deaths. Now, of course, this is mitigated by having a scope shoved up your butt, right? Okay. Now, that is before the Obamacare mandates went in, that this had to be paid for. So you had some health plans where you had to pay for it, all right? Now, obviously, making them zero cost to you is going to incentivize people to go ahead and have it done because they don't have to get out the checkbook. All right, fine. So,
I would settle for a real normal cost that people can pay.
But the fact is, yeah. You went from $500 to zero. Okay? Now, of course, it's not...
Actually, went from $500 to $1,000 with somebody else paying for it.
Well, I get that. But the point being, of course, we know how this all ends up ultimately working.
You're still paying for it, just not today.
I'm just saying, the $500 still goes up your butt.
Right.
Okay? It's just that you don't see it because it's in your grocery bill.
Right.
All right? Okay. In 2020, which is 10 years after this go... And this actually, you know, this mandate... showed up starting, I think it was 2011 was when it was first actually there. But 2010 is a nice clean year. So, and we all know that if you get cancer, it doesn't kill you in 3 days, but it probably does. If it's going to kill you, probably kills you within a couple of years, okay? All right, so 2020, we've had plenty of time, and this is before the crazy, because if you got colorectal cancer in 2020, probably didn't kill you in 2020, probably killed you in 2021 or 2022. And oh, by the way, the crazy started with the lockdowns in 2020. So those people who died of it in 2020 probably had it in 2019, right? Or before.
Oh, yeah.
Reasonable. All right. So we had, in 2010, we had 51,500, if you take the various people that count this kind of stuff and you add them up. And in 2020, it was 53,200 people who died of this same condition. Now, you just took the cost structure out of the individual person and forced it across society, and the death rate did not go down. Now, what they will tell you is the age-adjusted mortality has been dropping. That is true, but that is the statistical trick, because if something was going to kill you in 1 year, it kills you in three. The age-adjusted mortality rate decreases. What they didn't bother to tell you is that during those other 2 years, all your hair fell out, you couldn't get out of bed, you're crapping yourself, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay. And, oh, by the way, your bank account's been drained in the minute, along with your inheritance for your kids. So we don't in any of that calculation count the quality of someone's life. We simply count the quantity, and oh, by the way, age-adjusted mortality rates for that reason are BS, because they do not take into account any of the other important factors, and that's done deliberately to lie about the effectiveness. The truth is, if you get something and you die of that thing, the treatment's a failure, period. End of conversation. No, I'm sorry. I disagree with that, Chief. If you tell me that you can fix something and that the whole point of me going through whatever is that you can find it and fix it, and that isn't what happens, you lied.
I disagree a little bit, but go ahead.
Well, okay. Now, 2020. All right. Now, you would expect that if, in fact, deferring the screenings... because the doctor's offices were closed, right, for a good part of time, other than emergencies, right? And routine examinations were not emergencies. So we closed those offices except for those situations. And for those where they weren't closed, and there were in some places where they weren't, you scared the hell out of anybody, because if they went in there, they might get COVID, and then COVID would kill them.
Right.
That's obviously bad. All right. Guess what? In 2024... the number of people who died of the same condition. And this is an estimate at this point. It's not entirely done because we are, the CDC Wonder data and stuff is in arrears, and it's frequently a year or more behind. So we don't really, I mean, what we got right now is a very good guess, but it's not totally finalized because we're not far enough down the road. 53,010 as opposed to 53,200. All right, so these deferred screenings didn't kill anybody. No, they didn't. Now, wait, Chief. I'm not talking about an individual person who suddenly pops up with stage four and dies of it. Okay, I'm not talking about that.
Well, that's what happened to Karen Reeves' mother-in-law.
Listen, that's happened. That happens to people all the time. Okay, what I'm saying is this:
it didn't happen when she knew she had a lump and couldn't get in for 6 months, and by the time she got in, it was stage four.
I get this. Yeah. I'm talking about I'm not talking about individual outcomes because, of course, every person is a trial of one, right? With whatever it is that's going on in your personal body. I'm talking about the statistical facts.
Well, I don't disagree. You know, we're not running over here until we get Joel, but one of actually the lady used to be on the show. Her brother was a orthopedic surgeon, but he was doing general stuff with Michael Reese. And that's where he went to medical school. And at the time, Robin was a executive at Pullman. I wasn't. Pullman had this incredible deal where if you're an executive, once a year you went in and had this massive physical.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking upper and lower GI. I mean, a whole bit. And these are people that are 25, 30 years old. I mean, they're
yeah.
And so Neil, the guy's name, says to me, he goes, you know, they're doing this stuff. He goes, normally, if you have a colorectal problem, he goes, there's probably going to be some blood or some discomfort pretty damn fast. He goes, the chances of somebody in their 30s, you catching it, you even if you go over a year, are you catching it between like the onset where the test can catch it and when you'll notice it yourself? You got to be like, it's got to hit you in like the right month almost, or month and a half. He goes, in my mind, it's really kind of waste. Not only that, it's probably invasive to where you can actually have problems with that. But it's one of those things where it probably, this is one man's opinion 50 years ago, okay, so don't take this to the bank. But he goes, you know, it's, you really have to be, for them to catch something in you before you catch it at that age, it would have to be your lucky day, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But do they even do upper GIs anymore for people that are young? Why would they used to do that? God.
I don't think so. I mean, but the point I'm making is that you can look at this at these statistics for a bunch of different things. Okay, I'm just picking on one that you know everyone is has been screaming about for a long time. By the way, this is what ultimately killed my mother. Okay. By the way, she was nearly 90.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. I mean, something gets everybody, right? But this is, but when you look at this and you look at the claims that people make and the amount of money that gets spent and all of the screaming that goes on about this, the money does not lead, the money and the screening and all that stuff and all the procedures, everything else, does not actually lead to you dying of something else. It doesn't actually stop it. And that's it. Now we just had
another
example.
Statistics are very shaky to start with, and when you get people that are manipulating them and interpreting them in their own way, you might as well not even do it.
Well,
right?
We just had and we just we've had this thing with Alzheimer's and amyloid plaques, and as I pointed out a long time ago, the probability is that this is the same sort of crap that's been going on with cholesterol. We have claimed that if your cholesterol numbers are are what the doc doesn't want to see, you ought to be taking statins. Okay, statins do lower your cholesterol numbers. There's absolutely no question that they do that. They absolutely do. However, cardiovascular disease deaths from 2010 to 2024 have nearly doubled.
You can't, you try and get off a statin if you get a heart doctor.
Well, I'm just saying,
yeah.
They have nearly, despite the fact that we have this, this scream fest on cholesterol numbers, cardiovascular deaths, and by the way, smoking obviously causes, besides lung cancer, also causes heart attacks and strokes, right? A lot of people have stopped smoking in the last 15 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot fewer people that are hitting the Marlboros than used to be.
Well, you know, there's still a lot of people.
I understand. Yeah. There's still a lot of people that smoke, okay? But I'm just saying, in terms of percentage, I mean, statistically speaking, the number of people smoking has gone down dramatically.
Right, you will be stunned if you go to a, you know, a lot of people buy those things now at like if you go to Meijer's store or someplace, then there's the gas station piece out front,
right?
And one of the ladies who, you know, I go the same time every Sunday. So, matter of fact, me talking to everybody, Carl, can you imagine that? And I said, so one day she was out in the gas station. So next week I see her. I go, well, you're not being punished this week. You're not out by the gas station because somebody didn't show up. She goes, no. She said, but I'll tell you what, I got an eye view of the world. I said, what do you mean? She goes, in here, we rarely sell cigarettes. I don't even know if they sell them in the store. They must, but I don't think they do. She goes, out there, I can't believe the amount of people that come in there to get their two packs of cigarettes and walk out. She goes, no, but we're being a cashier in the store. Like, I've never seen them in the store. And maybe they are there someplace. I don't know. Are they in a regular store now? Can you buy cigarettes in a Juul and stuff? I don't even know.
Well, I think you have to go to a special counter and stuff because it's kind of like booze. They, you know, obviously you don't want the
all right, because, I mean, maybe they just sell them out in the convenience part. She goes, I can't believe how many people come in and buy cigarettes. In here, you would think everybody quit.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, I had an aunt that bought them by the carton and nearly made 100. And ultimately, other things got her. Now, if you autopsied her after that, I'm sure that her lungs would have looked like a coal mine.
Yeah, but you have to be very, very lucky on other stuff, because any medication you take, anything they try and do to you if you're a smoker, it doesn't work.
I got it. But she was this. I'm convinced that she was, she was just mousy and mean enough that even the devil didn't want her. So,
what do they say? Only the good die young.
something like. I mean, you know.
I think we have Mr. Joel.
Yeah, I loved it.
All right, we'll see you on Wednesday if not, or on Friday if not before. I don't know. Why don't you hang around in case Kenny doesn't? Right. Joel, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Good morning, Chief. Good morning. Good morning. We have a little volatility, huh?
I got a report. It says. And where are we? Tuesday and Friday morning that you sold 20 spoo. And Friday night you bought 40 spoo. And last night you sold 80 spoo. So you're buying like Argentina today, like we're buying Argentina, right?
Yeah, what is Argentina? Oh, yeah. You know why? Because I love debt. Debt on top of debt.
Yeah.
I love it, you know. Things are getting interesting, Chief. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah. And I, I've never had a, we've had some situations, but we have some newer clients that have mutual funds in their accounts, and we've been liquidating them kind of gradually. Good Lord. The price is up and down between when you make the phone call and the close is like unbelievable. One day we're big losers, and next day we're a big winner, and like, no, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, boy, that's a tough thing, right? Getting out on the close,
yeah.
And that closing print, you don't know what, you know, from one day to the next. But yeah, that makes them a little bit more difficult to manage. You gotta time it so well, and you know, with client. I mean, for us, a percent move, a percent and a quarter move, it's a big deal. But I guess if you've been in the markets forever and you've been investing in these funds, it's not that big of a move.
No,
it just kind of stings, right? When you sell something on Friday and then you look at that Monday opening, but it is what it is, Chief. We need to calm down here.
How are we going to calm down when on one day we've got, you know, massive tariff wars, and the next day, oh no, it's okay, and the next day we got them again? I mean, these are incredible moves, and I just can't, in my heart of hearts, think for a second that people in Washington aren't trading this stuff. I mean, it is so obvious that these announcements, what they're going to do to the market, that how can somebody? Which, I guess, here's the age-old question, Joel. would you rather have somebody who knows that this is market moving and trades ahead of it and is mm-hmm. and is therefore a crook, or somebody who's too dumb to realize it? I don't know which is worse.
Oh, boy, cheap. I mean, you know, we're going down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, I don't know which is worse.
I think what's worse is actually doing it. Because if you're too dumb, then you can plead innocence. But yeah. if you do it in, and so... If that, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no,
I
mean, it's a toss-up.
Your question that I tried to dodge.
Well, I mean, I'm trying. I've been dodging for 30 years too. I mean, which is worse? I don't know. But
the market is manipulated higher overall.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Right. And there's bumps in the road here. You look at the sell. You know what fundamentally changed between 10:30 last night and 7 a.m. this morning when the S&P's made a 113-point move?
I'm going to say that we will find out sometime this morning what people already know. Some announcement, some tweet.
People are postulating that that China's fighting back. But anybody that bought that rally yesterday had to do it knowing that this trade war is not over and that China's going to retaliate. There was actually news circulating yesterday that they already were retaliating. So,
well, the original announcement on Friday, and when we started dropping like Iraq, right after I was on your show, we started dropping like Iraq, and of course we're scrambling to figure out what the hell is going on. And all of a sudden you get the 100% sheriff on China, Trump announcement. And then the first one was the part about the rare earth. So me still having a little trust for some of these people, why I have some, I have no idea. I sort of assume that the Chinese said something, and right away, Trump fired back.
Yes.
Leaving somebody like no time to really get in the middle and make a trade. Well, it turns out, Carl says the Chinese stuff was on the wires during the night. And we took a long time to react to it, so people had plenty of time to put a trade in if you knew what was coming out of the White House. It wasn't back to back like that. You know, it's hard. But I will say this, Joel, it's probably the best, and I don't know if it's the final chapter in the 20 years of buy to dip strategy. Talk about the biggest possible dip was yesterday after Friday night, right? And when we came flying back yesterday, almost the same amount. But I will say, I'm not, you know, this is not investment advice, but I will say this. When this stuff starts to happen, and I think you might agree with me on this, if you have a strategy where, I'm going to be long stock, and by the way, I'm going to have puts that are close, I'm going to protect myself or not, or I'm going to have covered calls or not. But whatever it is, if say you have puts against your stock, just for instance, when this starts to happen, and you adjust accordingly. Okay, we run way up, roll your puts up. We run way down, you roll your puts down. Every one of those trades is a good trade, because you're in a position to fade it. You're not in a position to pile on or get clobbered, right? You're already protected. So all you're doing is making in a lot of these adjustments. Not everyone, they turn out to be pretty good trades when it's doing this back and forth.
Those strategies tend to work in a correcting market. Where those strategies don't work is when you really fall out of bed or just keep ripping higher.
Yeah.
Right now, we've distanced ourselves from the highs. The prevailing thought yesterday was, we're going right back to all-time highs. That was the buy the dip, buy the dip of the century, the generational buy the dip. And that's how the market reacted yesterday and in overnight. Now there's a little bit of trepidation here, so I think it's a big week for the markets. I mean, right now, we're up on the week. I try and not get caught up on the day-to-day stuff and try and look at things on a week-to-week basis. The price action last week was bearish. Okay, we were down. It was bearish. You can't call it anything else than that. On a weekly basis, you look at things from a negative stance. On a monthly or looking at things quarterly. Well, hey, quarterly, hey, it's just a buy the dip opportunity, right? We're still above levels and indicate that, you know, this is the area that you should be buying, right around 6,600. So am I convinced that this correction's over? No. Do I like the move that we had yesterday? No. But if we could see some consolidation here, holding here today, hold above Friday's lows, then you just have to, you know, assume that, yeah, it was just another buy the dip opportunity until we get further deterioration.
Well, it comes down to, we're at these super high prices not like you should go out and sell or anything, but it's by anybody's normal, type of, I mean, I'm looking here up Oracle, that's why I'm, I'm looking at Oracle revenue per share is.
Don't look at stupid stuff like that.
Oh, I know. I don't want to do that.
No, you don't. I got to hop here. Don't look at fundamentals. Don't look at earnings. Don't. None of that stuff matters, Chief.
Well, the revenue per share is $3.50, and the stack is trading. What the hell is it? It's 302. So it's like how many times revenue, and yet they just are getting all this stuff from X, right? Or not X, but TikTok. And one of our listeners, by the way, called and said, how much, just now all we're doing is taking the Chinese, having everybody's personal information and giving it to Oracle. What's the difference? They're not going to make any money on it. I don't know if the guy's right or not, but I mean, there's all kinds of points. I mean, what perfection has to happen for Oracle's revenue to go up like 10 times, which it needs to do for his stock.
Everyone's using AI spending and data centers, and that's where we're going. And it's not a bubble. It's just the way the world is going, and we have to adjust it. And, Chief, you guys are in for a tough game, but I got to hop. And
hey, I enjoyed being on last week. You guys were...
Yeah, we're going to get you on again, Chief, so... Go Blue. You guys are going to have a tough time with those Trojans.
I think so, too.
I'm surprised at the spread. And my Wolverines, I'm not recommending any parlays or anything, but, boy, I'd take the Huskies in the points and the Trojans in the points. That's even though they're both traveling out to the Midwest. Yeah. That's my closing thoughts. So talk to you next week.
All right, bud.
It was great to be on with you.
All right. Do we have Kenny?
Not yet.
You don't, but you have me.
We got Carl. So, what do you like, the Trojans or the Wolverines?
Oh, I don't know. How about if I don't like either one of them?
So, this guy from Penn State, right, is he gets this huge buyout, right? It's like $50 million, and so the number actually is $8 million a year. He's getting. He's got 6 more years left on the contract, so that's 48. So, I've had a bunch of people correct me, but he also gets paid for the rest of this year. So it comes out to like 49.7 or 49.4 or something. So it's a lot of dough. Now, whether it'll be some kind of a cash settlement to where he can go to the next place and not say he's getting paid twice or something. But I don't think that if he goes somewhere else that goes down. I don't think that happens. But it's individual contracts. I don't really know. But so I go up to the club last night, run into the guy who kind of runs the club. And he goes, and he's an LSU grad. And he sort of... We get along great. I think he likes me, but he has a sore spot for me because Notre Dame gave them Kelly, and he can't stand Kelly. So he goes, I hear Penn State's interested in Kelly. God, I'll buy his ticket. Get him the hell out. We can't stand the guy. Get him the hell out of here. He goes, I'm going to go say a prayer tonight somewhere.
Oh, my God.
How long do you think? I actually heard yesterday from a contributor, I won't say which one, that there is a deal afoot for a outside capital firm to buy, I forget what the number was, 10 or 15 or 20% of the Big Ten, the entire Big Ten conference.
Whoa.
And that every school might get a $160 million check.
Wow. Well, that's a number.
The idea is that they will not accept any new teams till like 2046 or something. So they're going to put a stop on any new teams.
Well, wait a minute. What
So what's the play on that? Why would somebody throw that kind of cash on the table?
Because they're going to turn the entire Big Ten Conference into some kind of a money-making deal. And I don't know, right now, I don't think the conference makes the money. The school, so there's got to be some change in
but why would you take that deal? I mean, if you think there's a future in, I mean, okay, you take a look at like the craziness that's gone on, you know, with all of the things surrounding this, right? You know, which has come out of the name, image, likeness, you know, all that sort of stuff, the portal and everything else. Certainly the schools that are in the catbird seat to profit from that, and it's not all of them, but it's some of them. Why would they be interested in taking a hunk of cash for something that they think is a golden goose?
A couple of people that are on the show that came in yesterday, and we had a nice conversation. One of them's pretty good on taxes and can convince. Even if they do that, they're going to stay in this nonprofit area. I don't see how the hell that works. But
there's that problem too. All right, I mean, yeah, there's a tax issue that comes through with this.
Well, obviously they've run it by, you know, who knows? Maybe they went and gave Trump $20,000, and he said, okay, we won't change the tax law. I mean, I don't know. I mean, why does Major League Baseball still a monopoly? Because it's not interstate commerce. I mean, come on. I mean, it's not like this doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there's a difference between having something that's an explicit statutory construction, which, you know, for Major League Baseball is the case.
No, it's not. It's a Supreme Court decision.
Well, but I'm saying it's, yeah. But it's backed by something formal.
Right.
Okay. When you change the character of what you do, but the characterization is where the legal basis comes from. In other words, it's not a court decision where somebody eventually sued or a statute was passed or whatever. But you have nonprofit status because you fit within an existing set of guidelines.
You're supposed to be a small part of the school.
Well, I get that.
I understand. I'm just explaining.
But all of a sudden you change it, and you don't have an explicit backstop either in a statute or in a Supreme Court case. And then to expect that this is just going to sail on through and nobody's going to come after this. I mean, when every government entity on the planet at present is trying to figure out how they're going to raise more tax revenue somehow, because, gee, we're not spending money like drunken sailors, and actually that's an insult to the sailor who at least was chasing some skirt while he was doing it, right?
Right.
I mean, that kind of thing makes no sense.
Well, what do you think the last tax bill doesn't make any sense? Who gets this deduction?
The stuff that's going on now with the shutdown is just, it's flat lunacy, okay? I mean, and the idea that this is primarily standing in one particular place and, you know, oh, well, you know, we've got to extend these subsidies, you know, this subsidy change. And, you know, as I pointed out, the reason the Democrats passed this the way they did in the first place was to prevent the CBO from scoring it as a permanent change. Because the deficit impact, if they'd done that, the bill wouldn't have passed. Okay, to be frank, there's no way it would have passed because the CBO would have come back and said, by the way, this is going to put $10 trillion on the deficit in the next 10 years. Okay? And that would have been the end of support for it up and down the line. The market would have taken a huge header immediately if they'd done that, despite the fact that we had a pandemic going on. It didn't make any difference.
If the Democrats had an ounce of brains, and I used to be one, in effect, my biggest complaint against them is they've given us this monster.
Yeah.
If I went to the dark side, I could never really do this, Carl, but I suppose deep in my Italian side, there's a gene or two in there that would allow me to do this. I don't know about the Irish side. But I would find two or three of the most egregious fat cat Republican, either companies, I don't care if they're Republican, companies or somebody that just saved a boatload on this last new tax bill, and I would put their names out front and center, just like the Republicans do for the one murder for an illegal immigrant. I'd put this is why we have the shutdown. Joe at Oracle, instead of paying $50 billion and $200 billion he just made, paid like nothing because of Trump's tech. They need to get just as dirty, but I don't think they're smart enough. So I never want to do that. That's not my idea of politics. But you got to give the message that is there.
Well, I was going to say it's everybody's idea of politics. I don't know that that's. I mean,
that's why. Why do you think I would have no interest in that?
Well, yeah, the problem that you have right now is that the Democrat side of the aisle has an absolute losing hand simply because the CR that's on the table doesn't have any policy riders in it. It is simply a we're not done negotiating. They just don't want to negotiate.
Well, how many people in the country are going to figure out, even the rack rib, you know, this guy's a god, going to figure out the House isn't even in session.
No, I get that. Okay, all I'm saying is that there is the circumstance that arises where you engineer a lockup. And then you try to ram through a policy change, a.k.a. what happened with Obamacare, all right? And by the way, a bunch of other things. I mean, the Republicans have done the same crap, okay? You try to ram through a policy change, and you legitimately can be charged with doing it that way, all right, with setting up a situation where that's the case. And it is a legitimate argument. Isn't one of those times, Chief.
The only legitimate argument in the whole mess when you talk about these debt ceilings things, the only reason why you should ever even be a debate.
Well, but we're not. This isn't a debt ceiling thing.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. There's no debt ceiling. It's
something they put together. This ongoing.
The CR.
Yeah, it's a 17 times a kick in the debt ceiling thing down the road, basically.
Well, actually, the CR is in this particular. Now, my argument has always been on both sides of the aisle.
The reason why you don't have a budget, which means you can't borrow, right?
But the reason I have an issue with the entire CR nonsense in the first place is that the way you shove policy things down people's throats without actually having a debate and a vote on the individual components is to throw them all together.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. But this particular CR, this particular one, not most of them, but this particular one, does not make any policy changes.
Well, now, it does if the one area of Medicare is not covered, or Medicaid or whatever it is, that's a policy change.
No, it's not. The policy change is going to come at the end of the year based upon the prior administration and the prior bills that were passed and the fact that they sunset. Now, if you want to make a policy change, the policy change comes by modifying that, which, by the way, during regular order, which we're supposed to go through these budget bills and actually do this stuff, right? That's the time and the way to do this.
But nobody cares about that. It's all
I care about it because
But nothing's working that way now. It's who gets the jawboning high ground.
I understand that. All I'm pointing out is that in this particular case, in the general case, you're absolutely right. The CRs are an absolute abomination. They're crap,
yes,
and they never should happen. And oh, by the way, this one shouldn't have happened either.
By the way, for those that don't know what we're talking about, it's a continuing resolution instead of a real budget.
Right. So this one shouldn't have happened either. And by the way, this Speaker of the House got his job because McCarthy said he wasn't going to do them anymore, and then he did several of them in a row, all of them with huge policy changes in them, and he got fired for it. And then this guy got the seat by saying he wasn't going to do them, and now he's done several of them in a row. All right. Now, the difference, however, in this particular one is it doesn't make policy changes. Now, that is, other than this $80 million for more security for congresspeople. Other than
that, where do you get all the money for the his own private army? Where's all that coming from?
Look, I'm just saying, that is in the
existing. It seems like there's always money. Where are we?
No, Chief, this was in the. Hey, guess what? When the other side of the aisle puts in place a policy that you can use to grab a stash of cash, the other guy's going to do it. All right.
At some point, I was talking to somebody last night. I mean, whatever, a friend of mine. We're talking a little bit about the potential of front runner in the last few days with these announcements.
Oh my God!
And yeah. And guess what the absolute ignorant remark was?
Oh.
What about Pelosi? I go, wait a minute.
Oh good God! I said, I mean, hello. All right, so Pelosi was doing it too.
Was using what was going through Congress, making pretty good trades over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Not the same as trading, right? She has no more idea how to do a spoo before a White House announcement than the man in the moon. And
guess what I do, but Trump didn't tell me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, though, the thing, you know, what gets me about this latest little set of convulsions here is this whole thing with this rare earth, you know, stuff that's been going on. Okay. There is no shortage, and I've talked to a couple of people that are absolutely ignorant about the facts on this. The United States has no shortage of actual rare earth resources.
Well, we've got the one huge mine in California which we shut down because we didn't want to process it. And then there's that big mountain in Texas where they're convinced has stuff there, but nobody wants to start breaking it apart.
The problem isn't we don't have them. The problem is it's ecologically destructive to do it in a way that's cost-effective. All right, now... We can do it. However, one, you can either have it be more expensive, considerably so, or two, you can destroy the environment. So China doesn't care about the destroy the environment part, right? So because they screw their people all the time, they could care less.
How
and
many?
As a result, that's
put,
why
put this
stuff
in layman.
Got moved over.
How many tons of the mountain do you have to bust up to get enough of this stuff to sell? Is it like uranium?
A lot. And oh, by the way. The same situation is why lithium batteries are all coming out of China, too, and solar panels.
Okay. Hey.
Because the same environmental destruction has to happen in order to do it at a price that people find acceptable.
Hey, yesterday we had a long Carl should have been there conversation regarding nuclear facilities and the timing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you listened in, but it... You've mentioned at least two, maybe three, sort of competing nuclear type of reactors going forward.
Right.
If you know somebody put my ass in the Oval Office, God, I feel like I was in jail. But and I were to say, all right, which one of the three do we want to go forward with? Do we want to do one of each and see which is better? Do we want to take a year or two to design? Decide which one we like the best. You know, by the way, if it's never been built before, who the hell do we get to build it, to design it? I know after that, you know, you got to go find the piece of property. This one needs a lot of water. This one doesn't. I mean, this all takes serious amounts of time. I mean, I'm one of the first people who, when I look at a bridge taking forever, I'll say, you know, it only took 3.5 years to build Hoover Dam, but that's absolutely sort of untrue. When 20 years before, guys were doing soundings in the areas trying to find the best place to, you know, so you got to be careful when you say that. Right now, can anybody make a call? And and the next one's what kind we even want, what the property has to look like? Is there needs to be water, not water? I mean, where are we in this stage?
Well, we're not where we need to be, which is a serious problem in that. We, you know, this to a large degree, Chief, goes all the way back to Carter's deliberate attempt to destroy the industry, from which it never really recovered, and the inquiry into, you know, methods and processes essentially stopped. All right, so we are stuck today in the world that essentially Rickover created.
But is anybody? I mean, Bill Moriarty came out and said he's engineering firms now have 50,000 people in them, and just because we don't have people building the dam here, there might be 10 of them going in China, and those guys...
Oh, there is progress being made there now, okay?
There's a French guy, if we wanted a solid sodium one, that might know how to build one, or is there not?
The problem is that there's a lot of engineering work that's been done, but in order to actually put something online that makes electricity, you have to get a prototype up. You have to operate it. You have to have the, you know, that data that generates has to be examined. Because all of this stuff
you have a lot of theory, but until you have practice, you don't know what it costs, and you also don't know where the safety margins are, other than by the theoretical calculations, and those sometimes are not real. So you need that operating experience, and it's the reason that when we stopped going after the liquid salt stuff, molten salt reactors, MSREs, that was absolutely stupid, and it dates back to the 1960s. We should have been chasing that all the way through this. Now, it might have turned out that was a dry hole, but my suspicion...
So we not only have a reactor gap, we have a knowledge gap, is what you're saying.
Right. We have a knowledge gap, and that knowledge gap needs to be closed, but it can't be done in an afternoon.
So you'd have to actually build one of these things someplace to see if it works somewhere.
And then, okay, where's the margins on it? Now, by the way, how's this all pencil out operating cost-wise? Because...
Yeah, where are you going to put it? Who wants it?
Well, ultimately, yeah. Everything is money, okay, when you get down to it. So,
well,
yeah.
I was reading, one of the listeners sent me something yesterday about the... All these windmills have been going in out off Rhode Island's coast and stuff. The knowledge has stopped.
Well, that garbage, along with the solar nonsense, is a hot mess, and it is an albatross above people's necks, and it's going to be there for quite some time. It's not going away anytime soon. We've got huge malinvestment that happened in those places, and it's very, very bad.
But now they just stopped it. So you're
well,
things
yeah,
are 90%
because,
up.
Well, guess what? Because if you don't have the cross subsidization, which makes your grocery prices go up along with everything else, duh, because more deficit spending, they don't make any sense economically. And on top of that, they destabilize.
So no windmill anywhere. You're like Trump. No windmill anywhere is worth it.
No, the problem with these things is that the windmill by itself, or the solar panel by itself, is essentially a useless and actually damaging addition to the grid. And the reason is that it destabilizes the load calculations that have to be made, because you are unwilling to accept, and nobody else is either, and by the way, it's not a bad thing that you're unwilling to, that when you turn the light switch on, it must work. All right, when this data, this AI center wants its gigawatt of energy, it's got to be there. And unfortunately, what that means is that any intermittent source that is not guaranteeable as to dispatch, we don't know that it will work short of it breaking, you have to back up with other sources, and they have to be manned with available fuel, with available dispatchable capacity, and it has to be done on short order, because you don't know when it's going to rain, you don't know when the wind isn't going to blow, and, I mean, sometimes you can predict it. Obviously, at 2 o'clock in the morning, solar produces zero, right? But you cannot always predict it, and yet I expect that when I turn on my light switch, my lights work. And I have to be able, and industrially, I have to be able to do that. And if I can't do it, then that source has a negative economic impact. If you take a look at the cost required to make those intermittent sources reliable, you're talking about installing 5 to 6 times their nameplate rating, plus another 4 or 5 in storage. And when you take all of those costs and put them together, they all lose on the money. Nothing else. Leave the environment out of it. They all lose on the money, and not by a little.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's very local.
No, it's not.
Well, I mean, you can't tell me that a boatload of solar collectors in the desert to power people's air conditioning during the day isn't fairly reliable.
No, Chief, that's not the problem. The problem is on the day it's not. On the day the sun, that there's clouds.
Well, you don't need as much air conditioning if there's clouds.
Well, wait a minute. But if I need the power, you have got to have a natural gas fired or a coal fired.
I don't disagree, but I'm saying it's kind of local. I mean,
Chief, I get that, but you have to have the immediate dispatchable capacity. It has to be built, installed, fueled, and manned and maintained, and it has to be there. And that is why these things don't work out when you actually do these calculations. None of them pencil.
Well,
none.
Drive across northern New Mexico and tell me when there's not going to be wind or
Hey, listen, I get it that 90% of the time it's fine. Are you willing to have your AC not work the other 10? Because that's what you got to ask. That's the question.
Well, the...
Otherwise, I got to pay for the plant, right, but I don't use it.
The idea that there's going to be two cloudy days in Arizona doesn't mean that I want zero solar collectors.
Okay, those two cloudy days, everybody's air conditioner is off.
Well, you could have something like batteries.
No, Chief, guess what? They have a service life. You have to pay for them.
I think in some areas it's worth it, in some areas it's not.
I'm just saying, if you take all of that in order to make them reliable, and then you have the additional either storage or other capacity that's immediately dispatchable and paid for, and you add up all those costs, it doesn't work.
Well,
doesn't work on the math.
You have all kinds of these quick reactors, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have any of them, but the natural gas ones that you can fire on when you need it. Okay, I don't have a problem having those things around at 20% power, and once in a while have to go to 100, you're still saving a lot of gas, aren't you?
Well, maybe, but the fuel is not the primary expense. The primary expense is the capital cost plus the people plus the infrastructure, and all that's got to be there.
Well, plus there's going to be nights when it's 105 at night. We need air conditioning at night. I get it. I'm saying, can it be accretive to the system? Even if it's 10%, it helps.
Perhaps. And the question simply is, when I account for this, given the reliability expectations that everybody has and that we're not willing to compromise, and you add all of that up, does the math work?
You're supposed to add everything up all the time and figure it all out.
Guess what? Nobody does.
Nobody does. Nobody wants to.
Nobody wants to, because when you do that, the numbers don't pencil.
Well, you also have situations where when you start talking about the grid, if this Commonwealth Edison really want to buy for the next 2 hours wind power less than they're charging themselves essentially for their own power. I mean, you can't turn a nuclear reactor off, I know, but there's other stuff you sort of can for a little while. The politics in it is dramatic.
Well, but here's the thing. If I have a natural gas-fired plant, it consumes fuel. If I can curtail it, okay, I don't necessarily have to turn it off, but I turn it way down. It burns way less fuel. And the wind or solar that someone can supply to me during that period of time is cheaper than the gas costs.
Yeah.
Not the plant, not the amortization
on that,
not the people.
That's what I'm saying. They're all individual. I mean, that's my whole...
Then all of this, that's fine. The problem is I have to buy that plant. And I have to buy the staffing for it and the maintenance. And people do not put that into the equation when they start talking
advocating leaving numbers out. I don't do that.
Guess what? Everybody else is and does.
Get that part.
Well, and that's where they're coming up with the idea that we should be doing this wind and solar in the first place, because they're leaving the other costs out on purpose.
Hal pop in, but let's get back to the market here a little bit. Are we turning into the Weimar here? What is next month's money supply, if we can believe? What's it going to show?
Oh my God!
You saw Hal's last thing he sent us a week ago.
Yeah. The thing is, if the market realizes that this thing is going vertical, you're going to see the 30-year bond at 15.
Are you talking about the M2 trend that I've been tracking?
Yeah.
It's holding pretty tight to that quadratic trend. I mean, it's been pretty stable. I think the beginning of that trend is like December 2022, so it's tracking pretty well, and it's scary.
What percentage of the population? I don't know if you were on earlier, Hal, but somebody, there's an article here about I don't know if it's the mean or the median price of a car is just over $50,000 for the first time. I'm going to say that 75% of the population at least can't afford that. At least.
Yeah.
I
couldn't afford the mechanic bill. I mean, I can.
Well, that's
I
another problem. Yeah.
My 2008 Chevy, or I can maintain my 2012 Dodge van, but I can't maintain these new vehicles. I don't think I could even fit work on them.
You know what?
I don't have the equipment to work on them.
I have no intention of buying it. I mean, I have a 2015 Mazda that I can actually work on and that I have the diagnostic tools. There is no way, even if you gave me some of these newer things, the maintenance and upkeep cost on them, leave aside the uptick in the insurance expense because you know of even a minor wreck is all of a sudden $5,000, right? I don't think so.
I'll just stay with my old vehicles. I wish I had my 68 Ford pickup. That thing was awesome. I had a 68 Ford 4x4 pickup that had solid front axle, and those things were awful, but it was awesome. I mean, I actually built.
I had a solid front axle on my Dodge Ram Charger. You could shake a friggin' filling out when you drove the damn thing.
Well, you know how easy it was to line that pickup. I just needed a ruler. That was it.
There you go.
Well, my nephew, who's now got the two kids, he's an adult male. When he was a little kid, we're driving in a Ram Charger. He goes, Uncle Tom, how come these streets seems a lot bumpier in his Ram Charger? It's all you need is a solid front axle and a short wheelbase if you want to shake your head a little bit. At least the Ford to pickup, you had a longer. You must have had a 250 if you didn't have a 2.5.
The thing was, I think it weighed about 7,000 pounds.
See, I actually know the 150s had the twin I-beam, which was kind of had its own problems, and the 250s had the solid front axle, which, good Lord, every time you hit a bump, your head hit the roof.
I'll tell you, man, I had to tune that up once a month, and I had my tune-up tools. I had my strobe ready. I had my box end wrench ready. And every month when I pulled up for gas, I'd adjust the distributor and the timing every month. Because if I didn't, all that stuff kind of slipped, and I'd drop from about 8 miles a gallon to 4.
Nobody knows what the timing is anymore.
No, nobody knows what that is anymore. Yeah.
Remember when you'd go? I used to take mine to a place in Blue Island. One of the islands, Carl. Now, if you ever want to do some islands, you go to Stony Island, Blue Island, in Chicago. The place was Willie's Carburetor and Ignition Laboratory.
Hey, there you go.
Where your car was dyno-tuned and power-timed.
Well.
You know what that means?
Yes.
I don't know what those words mean, but I know how to do it.
They would actually put you on a dynamometer, and they'd run your car.
Yeah, they'd put you on the dyno, and that way they could check the advance and everything.
You know what I did is I made it easy on myself. I put whiteout on the timing mark to make it just real easy. I could tune my truck up in about the amount of less than it took to fill that 20-gallon tank up.
Yeah,
but you didn't know when you ran it up to 70 if the timing advanced properly.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that 68 Ford was, built to
did it have
run
a,
it 70 miles per
did
hour.
Did it have a 351 V8?
Yeah, it had the 351, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know my old trucks a little bit.
Yeah. It was an awesome truck. I sold it in graduate school, and I wish I had never done it because that thing was a beauty, man.
What would you give for one of those old small Broncos? If you get one of those in shape, those things are worth like $80,000.
Oh man, those are beauty. Those are a beautiful thing too. They're so pretty.
That's the one. That's why I wanted to watch 3 Days at a Condor, not just because Robert Redford died, because Faye Dunaway had one of those trucks.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little vehicle.
So when you listened earlier, we talked about the K recovery, where some people are doing real well and some people are going one way and one.
Well, I think that's been going on for, we've been talking about this for 15 years. That there's, people like the people who read the news copy in the teleprompter, they're doing fine. These late night TV hosts are doing great. The investment bankers are doing great. I mean, it's just a Cantillon story. This money that the Fed prints, whether it's through bank lending or the money, it just poof, there it is, and buys all these treasury assets. It is not evenly distributed throughout the economy. The people who touch it first are able to buy these assets uninflated, and they just constantly push this money out. And the people that receive it first, they're doing great. They don't understand what's going on. They think life's great, but man, I think everybody else is pretty squeezed.
Was there any way? The only time you could probably get and probably it's getting close now, a bigger bifurcation between the haves and have-nots was 1929.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, it's the Fed. I think the Fed is the real driver of.
Well, it's margin loans. In some ways, and we've talked about this, right now the money supply is growing so fast on its own that for the Fed to maintain, this is one man's opinion, for the Fed to maintain, say, a 3% growth, which they don't seem to want to, they have to severely retard the growth.
Yeah.
You ask yourself, how the hell could their balance sheet be going down with the money supply growing up? Because it's not going down fast enough.
Yeah.
But what is the end game? You know, and I'll pick one.
Well, those
stock.
reserves leak out, right?
Right, but I'm saying I'm pick
it's
one
like
stock.
Money leaking out over a dam.
We talked earlier. Oracle is revenue per share is $3.50. Stock is $3.04. So what is that? 80? 80 times revenue per share, something like that.
Well, you look at the per share ratio of the S&P 500, and what is it? Almost 40.
Well, I'm looking at revenue, not PE.
Oh, okay, PE.
Because revenue, I think, is a little. But I'm saying several things have to happen. One is Oracle somehow makes so much money that 2 years from now it's $80 a share. I get that. That's choice number one. Choice number two is Oracle continues. The whole economy continues to grow at such a speed that not even Oracle individually, but everybody's doing this well. I don't know how that's going to work. We're talking about an 8% real growth rate. We've never had that except after a war. The three is somehow it's too high, and someday it comes down. Is there a fourth choice here? I don't know.
Mm. Yeah.
Or is it just staying there?
I just think the way the current system's set up, it's going to continue on its merry way.
Well, so that means that the Trump administration, riding on the heels of all the administrations before him, takes it even to the next level, and we're doing a show 3 years from now, and a new car is $70,000. Who the hell can afford it there?
Not a snowball's chance in hell, my friends.
I think the only thing that can really happen is, we have to start unleashing. We have to unrestrain the economy, get rid of all these cartelizing restrictions that government
What do you
mean?
Creates. The cartel people love it. They're in charge.
I know, they love it. It's not going to... My brother Todd is the chairperson of the Sultan County Republican Party, and he wants to... I was on the phone with him the other day, and he was telling me that they're going to try to get Washington State to change the way they elect senators. I go, Todd, there's no way King County is going to give up all those senators so that a Sultan County could have its own senator. It's just not going to happen. They wield the power. They're not giving it up. So I don't see anything changing. I'm just telling you what we need.
All right, Carl, you piped in and said, they decided to go 8-9% money supply growth. Trump gets his German roots and becomes the head of the Weimar. He just pours money in. A lot of it comes to him. A lot of it comes to Bitcoin. A lot of it goes to his buddies. A lot of it goes to rich people. Maybe not, they're not his buddies. What's the end game there? We know what happened in Weimar.
What's going to end up happening here, whether people like it or not, is that you've got, there's people talking about like the whole Weimar spiral, right? And what happened over there in Germany. What I have pointed out to people on my forum and in several other venues, including here, and obviously it hasn't sunk into the mentality of traders in the market yet, because if it had, we wouldn't be up here. Is that the difference is that all of this debt that's owed has somebody obviously on the other side, right? For every piece of credit emission that the federal government does, whether it's through the Federal Reserve, whether it's through the budget, whatever have you, somebody has the other side of that paper and is getting a coupon on it. Now, if you, for example, as people have said, the reason that I want to buy gold today is because dollars are becoming less valuable, and therefore I am attempting to preserve the buying power of what I have. Right? I mean, that's the whole point.
The same thing as buying five Pepsis today because you think they're going up tomorrow.
Well, or by the way, buying five cases of liquor.
Yeah.
Right? Because I happen to like scotch, and oh, by the way, it doesn't deteriorate. Therefore, if I buy it today, or ammunition for that matter, same kind of thing,
yep.
Right? I like to shoot. Now, a lot of things are perishable, you can't do that with, but a lot of things are not, okay? And precious metals are one of those things that are not. Okay, fine. The problem with this is, if you have a tipping point arrive where people come to understand what Hal's putting out in the chart that's been floating around, and people look at that, and it accelerates. And the problem with all of these kinds of things, if you look at the S&P, for example, over the last couple of years, that is a parabolic graph. Right?
Yep.
Right. The same thing happens on the debt side, and then that debt never actually gets paid off. It always rolls. So when it rolls, the only way the government could actually try to make that work would be to, in one burst, emit enough to cover the principal, right? Because if you roll it, I come back and I say, by the way, over the next 10 years, you're going to cut the value of the dollars that I'm loaning you in half. Therefore, the interest rate is now 14%. Have a nice day. All right. And the government says, well, I can't pay that. Well, hello, good morning. So if they try to do that with the stuff that's due today, you can't call Treasury debt. You can't call most state and municipal debt. It doesn't have a call feature in it. So you can't force people to turn it over in advance. And if you do that, the next auction fails. And this is the difference between...
Well, you can print more money and go buy them on the open market.
No, you can try.
Yeah, you can try.
Okay, the problem is you can't do it all at once, and yet the debt rolls on a continual basis because nobody's paying it off.
Yeah.
Well, here's the end game on this is that this fails, and people think this is going to go the Weimar path. I assure you, Chief, it is not. There's going to be a backlash on it, and when it comes, you're going to get a deflationary crash in asset prices.
But here's the... Everything is... I think you guys... I would say that on a theoretical level, hell's way better than me. But I think my one thing is I always bring this down to the absolute personal level. And on the personal level, you say to yourself, this Weimar was a total goat bleep. No, it wasn't.
But not for certain people.
Not for certain people. And
right. I'm trying to prepare myself for that.
But you
with
can't.
Properties that I'm trying to run out the clock before I get squeezed too hard.
Yeah, but I
have that rental property in Utah. My in-laws have their rental properties in New York, and it's just a matter of hoping that we get these cash flows from inflated rents.
Yeah.
We get squeezed too much.
Well, just as an example, what I'm talking about. Let's say, for instance, somebody owned the Doral. Gee, who owns the Doral?
Well, gee, I wonder.
Yeah, well, if all of a sudden your room rates are $200 and you've got a $30 million note on the place, and all of a sudden 5 years from now the room rates are $500 because of inflation, your note doesn't move. And all of a sudden now you can walk down to the bank with a check and say, here you go. Yeah, but you're giving me money back that's worth half as much 5 years ago. Well, that's your problem, not mine.
Okay, yeah. But that only works, Chief, if you actually pay it off.
I'm saying that if I could research, where's John Flanagan? I need him, all the title records. I will bet you that the people in the Weimar Republic, the biggest benefactors in this, the people who loved it, were the farm owners. I'm going to bet you, Carl, that those families still own those farms.
But the problem you have with this in the modern era, okay, in the Weimar Republic, most of that debt was externally held. Most of it in the United States is internally held. And the person you're going to screw is the firefighter, the teacher.
Oh, without a doubt.
And,
all I'm
and
saying is if it totally blows up 15 years from now, Trump still owns the Doral at one hell of a nice price.
Trump owns the Doral, and the firefighters, police officers, and teachers in Chicago go down to the Doral, sack the place,
and his
family dies because there's going to be a civil war when you turn around and tell those people, oh, by the way, your pension, which is supposedly protected constitutionally in Illinois, okay, is worth zero because, by the way, that Treasury paper that we bought in order to cover it, yeah, it returns its principal. Unfortunately, all you can buy with the check you get every month is a loaf of bread.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how it plays out. That's why I think it has to stop. I mean,
well, it's got to stop. That's the point, right? Yeah. Is that this can't continue?
But it's the first time. Well, I don't know. Hell, you know more about history than me. it's the first time that a country pulling this crap has is a currency that essentially rules the world. It's the first time. The reason why people go into the dollars is we never did this stuff before. Yeah. Now we're doing it.
Why it hasn't turned into Weimar's because, you know, the dollar's still pretty dominant internationally. People still want to kind of hold it. And in 2008, they instituted interest on reserves.
Right.
And I think the Fed uses that to try to throttle how much of the reserves that they create leak out of the banking system. So,
well, they're trying, yes.
They're trying. They use that. I think that's what they're using to try to throttle that. But banks, being banks, are going to make loans to people who, you know, leverage purchases of financial assets. So that's how it's leaking out, and that's why you see margin debt so high.
Well, we have screwed. We had somebody, God, way back before, certainly before Hal, I think before Carl, we had somebody on the show. I think Kathy Durbin got this guy. He was a economist from UK or someplace. And he launched into this whole report. I wish I could find that. He launched into this whole thing. You guys know what I'm talking about. He said the biggest storehold of value in the world, especially in like Russia or a place where nobody counted on their own currency or anything like that, where if somebody had 7 to 8 to 9 $100 U.S. bills,
right,
basically in his coffee can. But that was the storage of wealth across Russia.
Yeah, because the dollar doesn't appreciate.
That person had
the dollar like to do the local currency.
Right, if that guy had $1,000 in $100 bills, we started the show 16 years ago, so we're talking 2009. What's that worth now? I'm going to say 40% of what he had when he started.
Yeah, well, this is.
But things are in relative terms,
right? Well, okay, but I'm saying it's not what you're. The U.S. dollar used to be a storehouse of value, and we've decided that we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, but Chief, some of this. Okay, so some of this depends on what you're denominating it in. Okay, so you know, I have argued that the entire concept of using dollars as the metric for GDP is a crock.
If you can change the value to the dollar, you're right. Well, that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do with the deflator, but then we cheat on that.
Well, but all this stuff is manufactured, right? It's all machined to fit, you know, whoever's narrative at any given point in time. What I would argue we should be doing is use a physical constant that's an invariant. So GDP should be stated in units of, for example, BTUs of energy or joules.
The way it is if you don't lie.
You do lie.
But everybody does lie, right? So the thing is, if you were to do it that way, then you would get benefit of technological innovation, which is fair, right? So if I figure out how to do a process using 30% less energy, hey, guess what? That's a huge productivity increase. And that should inure to the benefit of everybody in the country. And should show up in the GDP statistics. As it stands, it doesn't. And yet we, you know, because we denominated in this thing that is not a fixed constant. That all goes, you know, all of this goes back to, hey, how about we tell the truth? Because if you could take, you know, like I was talking about earlier with this stuff with, you know, oh yes, these screenings are fantastic, except the bottom line is that it's all statistical noise. If you actually look at the raw data, the raw information, the fact is that the number of people that die of this thing hasn't gone down, and it should if this stuff actually worked.
Well, if you, when I used to get on the, we need to do a break at some point. I used to get on the CTA bus to go to high school. I don't know if anybody does that anymore, but, and they used to sell advertising, right?
Right.
And if they didn't sell advertising, they always put these little cutesy little sayings up there where the advertising should be. Well, one of them was, when the truth hurts, it should.
Well, yeah, hello.
So, I mean, if you really don't want to come out and admit that if somebody was, you know, Grandpa Hal, Grandpa Carl decided they didn't want any part of the market, and in 2000 and were, you know, 15 or 8 or someplace, you put $1 million in the bank, and for some reason you're getting zero interest or 0.5%, or even if you put it in T-bills, you're making 0.5% for 10 years while your inflation rate's really 4 or 5, I'm going to say that your $1 million is now worth 600 maybe. And we're not about to drop that bomb on our population. And yet,
well, now here's something to think about. I'll let you guys go after you come back from break, because I've got some stuff that I need to get on. But the if you take a look at when we have stock prices as they are from a standpoint of, you know, you're looking at price to earnings or price to sales, either way it works. And you look forward 10 years versus someone who buys instead the 10-year treasury and just sits on it. And you look at the total compounded return across the next 10 years on a forward basis. All right. When you are up where we are now, that is 95% of the time a losing trade.
Oh, sure it is. Well, you might catch the one company, but...
Well, I'm just saying. I'm talking about the broad market, okay? Because, I mean, you could always catch the one company, right?
Right now what you're saying is if you diversify now, you lose. And usually you're supposed to diversify.
No, what I'm saying now is that if you're in equities, mathematically, if you look at this, and again, backtesting does not always work, right? We all know that,
yeah.
Right? But if you look at this historically, when you have multiples where they are today, on a four, because yesterday doesn't matter. What matters is what's going to happen in the future. When you look at that, and the alternative is to sit in treasury bills, you have a negative return compared against treasuries essentially every time. If you buy them here, and as a trader, you have to look at everything you have in your portfolio as if you purchased it today.
Oh, without a doubt. But yeah, okay. Try and talk to the people. Talk that into people.
I'm just saying that the total return, and this is where the Weimar thing, you know, and the people that are buying into this, you know, well, this is how it's going to work out, and you know, this is why we have to be in there because stock prices are going to go to the moon. Da 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 da. History in the United States says that is a bad bet.
Well, look, when we got, that's why I use a price to revenue. I went back and did a postmortem on the 2000 era, because I was going around lecturing people, and they were, of course, were accusing traders of wrecking their stock price, right? I was in a group in Brooklyn, and they were all over me about Cisco going. Now, matter of fact, the guy who was giving the seminar got up and left, and he said, "It's all yours." With this grumpy New York crowd. And I said, "But guys, hey, can I say something here? I've done a little research. I'm an OEX trader. I don't pay attention to a lot of these stocks. I mean, I'm an OEX guy. Right. We have positions in them." I said, "But I went back and did some research. I go, you know, when Cisco was trading 66, the revenue per share was like $5.
Yeah.
and they looked at me. But the trigger point back then for those stocks, you know, a lot of other stuff happened. The Fed pulled some stuff back. But the danger point was around 12, 13 times revenue for a mature company. We're not talking about somebody with a brand new idea that's just starting up. Right. I mean, hell, they could keep going forever. But we're talking about mature companies. And the companies we're talking about now, I mean, I got news for you. Oracle's not a startup. Neither is Microsoft, neither is Apple.
By the way,
neither is
NVIDIA.
Or the one in my favorite is Palantir. I think they're $1.50 a share of revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, or Snow is... What is Snow? Snow's way up there, too. So every one of these things could double this year. It could be the one you want to be in. But I don't see how 10 of them double, unless we do something with the dollar, which we're doing.
Well, they're trying. But again, there's a fallback point on this.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're awfully close to it.
So what's the matter with Washington? The Commanders, they can't handle the ball. It was like three or four turnovers last night. They gave the Bears a game. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Hey, what about those Mariners?
Yeah,
Can you read that? Holy moly.
Is that catcher all world or what?
He caught 15 innings.
Yeah.
And then he did what he did Sunday night and last night. My goodness.
So how is it those guys went 10 half innings with a guy starting at second base? Didn't anybody bunt the guy over ever and get him in?
Yeah, that's just not where the Mariners play. I mean, half the runs come from home runs, right?
Well, Someday, somewhere, you have to. The stats say you should always go for it on fourth and one, right? But what if I'm playing center? I think you don't do that.
Well, if you're allowed a head start like the Eagles tush push play, Those guys are always, they're either lined up in the neutral zone or they're going early. No wonder that freaking works.
And well, you know, it's not near as good since the one guy retired, Kelsey, right?
Yeah.
Man, in the immortal words of my buddy used to clerk for me, it was at some camp for basketball where some guy goes out and puts all these X's and O's and they're listening to this guy for 2 hours and some other coach comes in and says, boys, what really matters is who are the X's and who are the O's. Which, you know, anyway, we SP Futures.
Well, as long as Greg Brady discovers who steals the varsity high school boys football team's playbook, we're good to go.
Oh, God. SP Futures down 68, and as they do, Futures down 319. Quick break, and then talk, solve the problems of the world. Mr. Hale.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, I'm going to pick Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howell, Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 67, 68. SP Futures down 319. We're up a little bit when I came in, but we were up at 10 o'clock last night, and it turned this huge spin down. Now we're trying to make it back a little bit. I'm sure at some point here we'll find out what the news is. I'm not sure when that point will be, but we will find out that. We will find that. We have over in Europe, they've been bouncing around too, but not near as much as us. DAX down 317. That's 1.3%, so not good today. FTSE down 39.4. They're hanging in there. CAC around 982, 1%. So the FTSE is the stalwart. Asia, Nikkei down 1,200 points, 2.5%. That's a lot. Hang Seng down 448, 1.7. Shanghai down 20. Shanghai down 24 points. It's 0.6%. I think we're going to find out what's going on here at some point this morning. I haven't been able to find it yet. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.02. So the 10-year staying low. Bund down 3 basis points, 2.59. Gold up 50 cents, 41.33, but still above 4,100. Silver down 63 cents. That's 1.2%. It was up like 4% yesterday. It was over 50. We're still 49.83. So it's not like it's pulling back much. Copper down 17 cents, 4.96. Oil, which cannot get out of its own way, down a buck 41, 58.08. That's got to be a low of last year or two. I'll take a look. Foreign exchange, dollar is continuing to race up here. Euro's down to 115.5. It was over 117 maybe 10 days ago. That's a big move. British pound, same thing, 132.5. It was over 135. These 1.5% moves, I keep saying that they're big deals in these foreign exchange. I mean, but none of us really trade, so you don't really know. Bitcoin down 4,600, 111.036. It was 125 last week. Again, we've got stuff moving. Ricky, what got for us traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, morning, Chief. It's currently 7:42 here in Chicago, 62 degrees right now with a high of 67. Mostly cloudy today and will be breezy tonight. Otherwise, cloudy with a shower late and low of 57 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 70 degrees right now with a high of 86. Plenty of sunshine and pleasant, less humid today. The start of an extended stretch of dry weather tonight will be clear with a low of 63 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 31 minutes. We're looking at 44 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, Howard from Wolf, 41 minutes, 35 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 40 minutes. Let's talk MLB real quick. Mariners beat Blue Jays yesterday 10-3, and Dodgers beat Brewers 2-1. Today we got Dodgers at Brewers, 7:08 p.m. NFL, Bears beat Commanders yesterday 25-24, and Falcons beat Bills 24-14. Back to you, Chief.
Now what do you make of all these, there's all the stuff in the news. It's hard to even keep focus for more than a day or two because I wonder if this is somebody's strategy. They keep giving us more and more news. I don't understand this Argentina thing. Do you at all? Swapping dollars for pesos that are worthless?
Yeah, I haven't really been following that, but
I mean, how can you?
Argentina's had a problem with Latin America countries. Like, for example, one of my friends from graduate school, his dissertation was about the dollarization that was going on in his home country of Ecuador. So I think these Latin American countries have had issues with inflation for, you know, decades. And honestly, I haven't really been following that at all. So I really can't comment on it. Other than I think the guy is trying to solve the inflation issue, and I think it's, you know, it's really tough. I mean, because I mean, in order to solve that inflation issue, what do you have to do? You have to bring in things that people aren't going to like. So, once inflation starts getting out of control, I think it's hard to really tame it, honestly.
Well, when your money supply goes from 57, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take that more down to August of 2024. Your money supply was 54.5, whatever the hell they are, zillion pesos. And today it's 78.2 in July. So in 1 year, make that 11 months, you're up, God's sake, you're up from 55 to 80, 54 to 80, what is that? 50%? Yeah. Well, guess what? I think you got an inflation problem. Duh.
Yeah. Well, I think the inflation problem's been around in Argentina for a long time.
Well, when you're doing that to your money supply, I mean, it's what we talk about all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it goes back to, I think our inflation hasn't really taken off here, like, you know, Weimar Republic, because, you know, people want to hold dollars, and it's probably the least bad. Government currency on the planet. It's the least worst, right? So, of a major economy. So I think that's why there's this demand for dollars. And once we lose that, though, then I think it's going to get really bad. If we ever lose that demand because people want to hold dollars because their government's currency is less reliable, then I think the floodgates are going to open. And that's why my wife and I want to own real estate, and it's really hard to own real estate when you got four kids, you know?
Yeah. Inflation rate in Argentina averaged 189% from 1944 to 2025. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of the thing with Latin America. It's been like that in a lot of those countries for a long time.
Well, you keep printing money, it just keeps going up. I mean,
you can't keep printing money unless you're the reserve currency and people view your.
Well, we've been printing ours. We've been printing ours 5-7% over a very long period of time, and that's what our inflation has been, despite what they tell you.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, we're talking about Germany, right? In a different context, the word statistics comes from a German, Gottfried Eckenwall. And what it translates to is science of the state, essentially. And, you know, the government statistics, in my opinion, have been derived in a way that justifies government intervention. So they're not going to change those statistics, right? If they really measured inflation accurately, and it's actually 6-8% annually over the last, say, 15, 20 years, we've had no economic growth, none whatsoever.
I don't think we have. I don't think we have.
Yeah, I think nominal GDP you can measure pretty well, but the inflation, if they're goosing the numbers, generally speaking, to justify all government intervention, whether by Republicans or Democrats, then and inflation's really 8% in GDP. Nominal GDPs have been growing at 8. We've had zero economic growth over the last 15.
Years. I think we haven't. Well, put it this way, we haven't for.
Well, the reason why I think that too, Tom, is because the earnings ratio, the price earnings ratio, is 40. Home prices are twice as much as they were in 2008. Bitcoin is what, 100K?
Yeah.
Come on, you're telling me that they're capturing inflation correctly? I don't think so.
Well, I think there's a, you know, you and I, you know, pontificate on this. You know, all the time, pretty much, and one of the
reasons. There is a reason. There is an incentive to understate inflation in tax collection, income tax collection, because it captures more and more people. Because these thresholds of the marginal tax rates aren't keeping up like they should, and it just captures more and more people in these higher tax rates.
Well, I mean, people collectively, and no, how can I say this? When it's not your field, and you have a real job to do, like you build houses, you got a family, and anybody doesn't think that that's a 48-hour job in 24 hours. I mean, You with the triplets, for God's sake. How many more hours could you have used in the day, being a professor and everything else?
I mean, dude, this last week, it was brutal. I'm trying to get a paper ready for a presentation at the end of October, a week and a half. I was literally working from 8 a.m. till 3 a.m. all last week. For, you know, during the show, I was literally at my computer from 8 a.m. to 3 a.m. trying to get this paper done. I wrote like this 15-page paper, 80% of it in like 4 or 5 days, seriously. And I did all the preliminary data cleaning and statistical analysis. And there was a lot of data cleaning because I'm using government statistics. And, you know, I'll tell you what, man. If an experience I had last week, 3 or 4 different cases of collecting data from government sources, the government statistician, whoever puts this data together, would change the name of the freaking variable. So when I used Python to call all the data together, I'm looking at the summary statistics and going, why is the black population going from 4,000 for 4 or 5 years in a row to 50,000? The freaking dudes at the ACS, the American Community Survey, are changing the names of the freaking variables. Well,
they changed the different...
They're changing the name of the variable. How do you research?
They change the charts all the time, too.
Oh, my goodness. It was so frustrating. Just so frustrating. If somebody did that in the private sector, those dudes would not have jobs. They would just not have jobs.
Somehow,
they'd be fired for incompetence.
I don't know, you know, I'm not 25 anymore. I don't know if I'm sure. I'm not even sure I wish I was, but the... Somehow or another, this changed, Hal. And I don't know, you know, I don't want Ricky playing the Andy and Mayberry song where everything was cool back in those days, because nothing was ever totally cool. You're talking about people. What did Mike Royko?
Oh, that was Jim Crow back when Andy.
Mike Royko accuse Ronald Reagan of having a very myopic view of an America that never existed or something like that. But the. When I first entered business, my second job, I was the inflation guy.
Yeah.
And back in those days, when the inflation was 12% a month, they said it was, or not 12% a year, would be 1% a month, nobody really quibbled with it. There was nobody... No. The numbers, I think, you know, it might have been 0.9 or 1.1. I mean, nobody... But the idea that there was a systematic...
I'm telling you, Tom, government intervention is lucrative for a small group of people. It's lucrative.
Well, okay, but you know, I think who's
the... You guys were talking about, before I joined the show, you guys were talking about how lucrative it is
for government
to intervene.
You know, the most lucrative is for the government.
Yeah.
Because back in those days, I was, I knew something about tax law. Now I haven't come close to it, but I used to do taxes for people in my hood, you know, blue-collar people. And used to get the thing in the mail. If ever you want to see something bizarre, you know, you got 10 minutes to do it, Google, like, U.S. tax forms 1979 or something. And you'll see this huge thing they would send to your house. But every one of the tables in there, every one of the, if you had sales tax, there'd be a sales tax table. If you went through there, the instructions, any individual could sort of do it. Now, they didn't want to, so they gave me a couple of bucks to do it. But there had to be 10, 15 different tax brackets. Then we went down to a bunch. Now we got a few more. But if you were, in other words, if you were making 15 grand, you know, which was reasonable dough, not a lot, but it was some dough in those days, you know, it would be, your tax would be, you know, $800 plus, you know, 5% between 15 and 16.5. Then you got the 16.5, and it would be, you know, $900 or $1,000 plus. Every bracket, your percentage went up, right? So if you looked at the Reagan years, and you said, oh, you know, Dutch dropped all these, you know, got rid of some of the brackets, he did this and the other thing, and he lowered some of it. But if you look at the inflation, at the end of, let's say, 8 years, the inflation was totaled out to be like 75% or something. So the dude was making 15, and he's now making, 75? He's now making 25 or 26, right? Well, now his tax bracket, instead of being 5%, is now 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So, in essence, he's got the same amount of money as he started out, but now the government's getting 10% of it instead of 5.
Oh, yeah, and the same thing happens with the property taxes, right?
But if you look right now, I never thought I'd see that again, but if you look, and these have changed. The last time I did a study on this was about 4 or 5 years ago. The key number was the average, I'm looking right here, the average, where am I at here? Median income now is 48 grand. Median income in 2000 was 32 grand. So anybody who doesn't think our inflation rate has been more than 50% over the period of time is crazy. But
yeah.
But let's just say, but the thing of it is, if it goes over 50, once you go over 50, all of a sudden now your tax rate changes, your tax bracket changes, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden now, if you got Obamacare helping you out, and all of a sudden they don't help you out anymore. So the matter of fact, I'll dig up here. What the tax bracket? I think the tax bracket goes up over 40. So if you were making 40 before, and now you're making 50. There we go. U.S. tax bracket. Now you're making 50. I'll look at them. Okay. What are income tax brackets? We are. All right. I'll get it here. This is in 2024. If you're making up to 47,000, these have gone up some. It's 47%. I mean, I'm sorry, 22%. If you go over, and then once you get to up to 100,000, it becomes 24. But here's the thing: it's 12% to 11.6. I'm reading this thing wrong. It's 12% up to 47,000. Up to 100,000, it's 22%. So if you were making 45 5 years ago when this mess all started, and now you're making 65, you're paying another 10% on the increase. So
barely kept up with.
Well, if it did keep up with inflation, you're still down 10% going to the government.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I mean, it really is not. It's not a zero sum game. They're the ones that are winning.
You can barely buy the same goods that you were buying previously, but now you're in, oh, by the way, you're in a higher tax bracket, and the government has been able to raise your tax rate without even a vote in Congress. And the same thing happens at the local level with property taxes. They can raise your taxes by inflating the currency, and your home price doubles,
yeah,
which means your property tax is probably going to double.
Without a doubt.
And without your legislative action.
Yeah. Well, and you have, say, for instance, and you've got guys, you know, you got like PhD students. You can tell them what to do in research and order them around.
I don't order anybody around. Everything in my world is, you can do it or you don't do it. It's voluntary experience.
You know, if you were a tenured guy at the University of Chicago, it's one of these, the Carl Endowed Professorship at the University of Chicago. You'd have a bunch of, helpers. I won't say underlings that you can do all this stuff to. What do you suppose would happen if we just...
You know, I actually prefer where I'm at. You know why? Because I don't live in a world where... I live in a world where I have to do all the work. I have to clean the toilets. I have to wash the windows. I have to clean the data. I have to get the data. I have to do the literature review. I love that because I think it makes me a better economist. When you rely on people to do that kind of work for you, where you end up just being a manager of it, you know,
if you have people you can count on, some of this stuff is pretty hard to do.
Well, I know, but I'd rather just do it myself.
But what if you took? There is a.
I get all these ideas every time I look at the data and I have to clean a new data set, and I'm looking at millions of observations and hundreds of variables. I'm coming up with research ideas. I could do this. I could do that. I just don't have enough time in the day to do it. You know, so I like the situation I'm in.
Okay.
Know?
Well, what if we went back? Let's say 2000, or we can even do 2008. If the CPI, there's actually a website where you can Google individual.
Yeah, where they use the old version of CPI?
No, they do is you can Google one of the lines, and it will take you back just in that line. So if you want to know inflation of rice or something, they'll give you the rice line going back 25 years or 30 years, which of course you can't get from the government thing. I mean, somewhere maybe you could in there, but I can't find it. I think if we went back, let's say to 2008, and we were to take two lines, actually 2000 is probably better, two lines out of there. Let's take the medical expenses and nudge that up from 6% of which they say it is of your basket to 20% or even 18 or 17, which it is as the economy. If we take that line and make that one adjustment, and if we took the owner's equivalent rent line of your house and made that legit, because I did some stuff since, I think it's in 2008, they got housing prices up 80%. Well, in fact, they were up 150%. Your insurance is tripled and your taxes have tripled. So if we just adjusted those two lines, left everything else the same, I have to believe that the inflation is at least 2 to 3 points higher a year just with those two lines.
Yeah. And you know, that would track well with M2 money growth if smooth over like a 2 or 3 year period of time.
Exactly. It would match right up with M2.
Yeah.
And which would mean...
A smooth M2.
Yeah, which would mean that a significant, maybe 80, 85% of the population, in my opinion, has been in a recession since 2000.
Yeah, and that's the reason why the Fed stopped updating the series called Checking Account Balances and Cash of the Top 1%. The freaking thing, it looks like an Elon Musk rocket.
Yeah.
It's going straight to the moon, man. They stopped updating that series in 2022, and I can't imagine why, because, you know, my imagination
gives you the wrong answer.
It got worse.
Yeah, it gives you the wrong answer.
Yeah.
And when you look at, it's hard to even look at the numbers. I said the other day, the day Oracle went up, when it go up like $100 or $80 or something, on the that earnings day. Well, Larry Ellison, who still owns a chunk of the stock, what do you make? What do you make? $100 billion or $80 billion or some number?
Yeah.
He could have bought, you know, maybe it was 60. I went through it on a pencil. He could have bought, and this is scary, every single news outlet that's still independent for himself, and probably could have bought half of the NFL franchise.
Well, he wouldn't have done it with cash. He would have done it with leverage.
Okay, but I'm saying that's how much power you have when you do that. And one of my listeners called me over the weekend, actually, and he says, okay, so now this deal they cut with for TikTok, the guy goes, I don't know how much safer I feel with Larry Ellison getting all my personal information if I use TikTok than the Chinese. He goes, I'm not so sure. I wouldn't rather have the Chinese have it.
Yeah.
I mean, do we really want this information in the hands of a few people here?
I think what the Chinese were doing is they were manipulating the... I don't care about the data. They were just manipulating the algorithm, right?
That's okay, but how do we...
TikTok was taken over.
So we're saying we trust the five people that run the country?
Oh, I know. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the reason why they took over TikTok is they didn't like the Chinese manipulating the algorithm to influence Americans. That's the real reason.
We'd rather Americans influence Americans.
Exactly. That's the reason why they did that.
Well, let's just say I have one listener who's not so sure about that. So what do you got going this weekend? You and the gang going anywhere? Or everybody back in school or what?
Oh, I'm watching the Mariners, and I'm working on a paper, and I got to make a bunch of videos for my history of economic theory class. That history of economic theory class is going really well.
Cool.
Models I'm building, the Cantillon model, the Adam Smith model, the Turgot models, man, they're really cool. And I got to build the part of the class. The next part of the class is the socialist Marxist economics.
How far back did you go? When the one I had started with the Industrial Revolution in every country.
Oh, mine goes all the way back to Babylon. My history of economic theory class. It goes all the way back to Babylon.
Who did you interview from Babylon?
Well, you don't have to interview. You can just read about it.
On what, a hieroglyphic stone?
No, there's histories. There's they got the laws about selling in black markets and getting around government price controls and whatnot. So
people don't change, do they?
Egypt, yeah, it's pretty cool.
See, you're one of those guys that's all pissed off. You can't invent a new fetish, because it's all been. Hey, you know what? I did see one. The guy drives by. Talk about fetishes. The guy's delivering flowers. And guess what the name of the company was?
What?
Flowerfetish.com.
Oh, man.
That's pretty unique. Actually, sounds pretty cool.
I'm not a big fan of flowers and diamonds for some reason, but
because they're expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. we'll talk at you next week. S&P futures down 60, NASDAQ futures down 279. We'll see if we want to buy this dip. We'll talk about it tomorrow morning.
That's all, folks.